Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda in rainy Southern California. And I have my co-host Margaret in Boston. Hey, do you have snow there yet?
We do not. The ground is bare. It's 15 degrees, though. It's quite cold. And they've warned us. Listen, I don't even know what this means. If any of our listeners do, I'd love to know. I read this morning that the polar vortex has fractured into three pieces, and all I know is that does not bode well for the Northeast for the rest of the winter. It means we're going to be back in that constant snow, deep freeze. We're in for it now. So anyway, today's beautiful and we're happy.
Well, in all seriousness, Margaret, have had more rain in the last 4 days than we've had in at least half of a year last year. I've never, ever seen it rain downpour. Cats and dogs, as the saying goes, which I never figured that out. It's kind of a weird thought. But anyway, it has rained so hard for 4 straight days. I literally haven't left the house. I mean, it sounds stupid because I know a lot of people who whoop-de-doop, it's rain, but it's a big deal for this. Anyway, okay, so first thing, I want to apologize that the Shopify show didn't happen last week. My dad was in the hospital, and it was a very scary time, and as Margaret knows, I pretty much shut down, which is allowed in the world because that's what's most important. So that show will be happening on, what day is it, the 31st? Is that what it is, Margaret?
The 31st. You remember? That's what we said.
31st.
So it won't be next week. It will be the week after, and that's just because we had other shows scheduled, and I think we both want to give Shopify a good run through. So, yes, the 31st will be Shopify.
So I apologize.
How many questions bad. Yeah,
I know.
It's great.
I know. So it's going to be wonderful. But okay, so today we have an amazing show because we are welcoming back a guest we spoke to about 5 years ago, and that is Simi Jackson of Rosemary Brushes. So Simi is not only the director of sales and marketing, but she's also the daughter of Rosemary, and apparently the happy new owner of a puppy named Max, who I believe we might hear a little bit about. So, Simi, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm just listening to you introducing Max as well. I would like to say his Sunday name is Maximilian.
Maximilian. Got it.
That's his
there
posh name. But when we're just being casual, it's Max.
Okay, got it. Or when he's in trouble, I'm sure it's Maximilian, right?
Yeah, or when you're at the vet. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Oh, my gosh.
Well, we are
so
happy.
It's so good to talk to you ladies after so long.
I know. Yes. I can't believe it's been that long. What were we thinking? But so much has happened since we last spoke. I mean, your company continues to grow and thrive. Your line of brushes expands. You moved. You've traveled the world with your brushes. And I think I'll start with the basics so we can kind of just go with the flow. But the first really small question is, how has your business evolved since we last spoke?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That is the hardest question you could answer. You know, where do you start? You know, I've told you ladies in the past, it's not as if, you know, I came into a company that was already quite big and we were just looking to maintain. We've actually just grown and grown and grown, and Mum and I could both say that we would never have thought that we would have the growth 5 years ago that we had today. Just equally like 5 years ago, Mum would have said, pre-me, as it were, we would never have expected the growth in those 5 years, you know. So it's an impossible but a great question. And I figured I'll try and break it down a little bit. Obviously, the first thing that's grown in all this time is the brush ranges. You know, I already figured that when I came on board, we had quite a lot of brush ranges, but it just doesn't seem to stop, you know. I mean, it's funny, but artists seem to want more. I can't imagine another industry that would say, okay, so you've got 3,000 possibilities, but actually they're still not good enough. So, okay, well, we'll do something else for you, you know.
it's great.
Artists just always want something a little longer, a little shorter, a faster, thicker, you know, sharper, floppier, cheaper, more expensive. So it's really fun, actually. And I will say, I probably shouldn't say this, but a lot of our ranges, you know, come from mistakes. Where we've tried to achieve something, haven't quite achieved it, and thought, well, that's still really good. So we'll do that, and then we'll carry on trying to achieve what we were trying to achieve anyway. You know, just in like oil brushes alone, we've got, you know, six new ranges of oil brushes, you know, namely, like, for example, the Evergreen range that now most people would have heard of, or at least heard of if they haven't already used, you know. But actually, when you look at the Evergreen range, to say that they're now in the top three most popular oil ranges that we have, they are still pretty new, and it's so funny, but they're so popular, and most people now that use them would say they couldn't live without them, you know. We really tried to take a focus on bristle last year. The whole of last year, we looked at developing as much bristle as we could, whether that was with the Ultimate range. You know, basically, I felt like we only really had a chunking bristle, which was a student quality bristle. As much as that's great, and a lot of people wouldn't want to pay over the odds for a bristle, Mum and I sat down and we figured that we could probably try and manipulate the hair somehow to achieve what we needed to achieve to get a professional grade of bristle, as it were. But then I have to be careful how I say that, because for many years, and I'm saying, you know, 20-odd years, a lot of our professionals had been using our chunking bristle. So I don't want to make it sound like it was a cheaper grade, but it really was a lower grade of bristle. But in trying to aim for the Ultimates, we actually brought out the Classics, which was where Mum and I started trying to be a bit savvy with things and just test things a little more and do a mix. We actually did a 10% mix of synthetic in that. Trying to achieve, like I say, what we wanted with the Ultimates. And actually, they were so good that we thought, right, well, we'll bring out a range called the Classic. And then we actually figured we didn't need any synthetic in the Ultimate range. So the Ultimate is 100% bristle, but it was just how we were flagging the ends of the hair. So we interlocked the ends and faced them in towards each other as you brush make, and it actually meant that they would hold their shape for longer, hence making, but you can only do that from a higher grade bristle. So it went from chunking to classic to ultimate. So I hope that gives you like a little idea of an evolution of a range, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know what it gives me? It gives me a lot of questions. Like the first thing I want to know is,
well,
do you trust me,
we've batted them all out, yeah.
Do you look at the bristles under a microscope to see how they
bend? We have to. Yeah, we have to go right down to the single strand of fiber and look what the single strand of fiber looks like and how it can manipulate and work with a bulk of hair. And that's where brush making is a lot more technical than a lot of people would think, I think, you know.
Right.
It's the same with the synthetics. I mean, we actually, the Evergreens, again, I don't want to quote Bob Ross, but I guess I should. The Evergreens were a happy accident in that sense, you know, where we were trying to achieve something that was softer than the ivory. And we actually just thought, well, for Christmas, we dyed the hair green for Christmas. And we sent that out to some of our favorite artists to say Merry Christmas, stick this under your tree. And every
wonderful.
One of them got in touch by, you know, from like the 5th of January, we had letters streaming in from people saying, you have to launch this range. It feels totally different to your ivory. I know that it was meant to be a joke for Christmas, but we really want to add these to our brush set. So that's then how the Evergreen range came from, you know, and actually helped us then in the long run, because we were trying to achieve something softer than the ivory, but we didn't realize that would be it. And it was.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I've told the story before, but last year, you know, I was laid up for quite a bit of the year. And as soon as I sort of had this event that happened, and as soon as it happened, you know, a lot of people sent me cards. And a woman that I had met painting, who's actually a Brit, sent me a gift of Evergreen brushes. And I thought, first of all, what a fabulous gift. I didn't get to use them for 10 months, but what a fabulous gift. And it was, I kept looking at them thinking things like, why are they green? And I've never heard of these brushes. Well, once I used them, I am a complete convert. I thought I would live my life very happily using, I like the long ivory series. But you know what? I get it. Maybe it was a happy accident for you to discover them, but it was very, I never thought I'd find a brush I liked better. So it's kind of cool to think that you were, I mean, I never understood how a new brush style could evolve. And
yeah,
I think
it's
so awesome
absolutely.
That artists can weigh in on it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not the only one to feel that, you know. It's quite amazing, actually. I think for Mum and I, one of the reasons, I know this isn't the question, but I just wanted to perhaps add to that to say, Mum and I feel that when you look at professionals, and let's take it from the top level here, because it always starts at the top and it goes right the way through. But when you can identify an issue that a professional is having, and you know full well that it's nothing other than the tools that they're using, because let's face it, a lot of the folks, and I can name drop, but I think you guys would only need to look at our brush set list to know we're talking, you know, serious professionals here. When they're then struggling with their tools, I can't even describe to you how good of a feeling, for want of a better phrase, the best feeling on the world, to be able to then, for us to develop something that we know that they can then use, choose and rely on, you know. And why I say start at the top and it filters through is because the minute that your teacher loves it, the chances are they're telling all their students, or the minute that professional enjoys it, at that point, you know, people will follow. And a lot of the time, you know, well, I could tell you 100 examples of where people will now say, I couldn't do what I do without these brushes. You know,
that's not
just rosemary brushes in general. That's specific to a range. Yeah, it really is huge. So that's one of the reasons why we keep growing the ranges, you know.
It's great. It is great. All right, I'm going to jump right into a technical question.
Mm-hmm.
Because we mentioned that you were going to be on, and a couple of people wrote into us. So I'm sorry that I couldn't find his email. You know, people contact us in so many different ways, but I do remember exactly what this gentleman said. He was concerned. He wanted to know if I would ask you if there was a chance that he could use too much brush cleaner. And I'm guessing it's one of these, you know, brush cleaners that you immerse your brush in after you've removed most of the paint, et cetera. But then he went on to say what he normally does is he cleans his brushes with oils, and he said safflower oil, and then he gives them a rinse in, you know, solvent, like a Gamsol, and then he'll condition them with oil until the next use, which I know I've seen folks do it where they put a little oil on and they kind of flatten the brush out and let it, you know, sort of dry up like that. He was wondering if he was using too much oil, and also if he has a brush that's, you know, sort of stiffened up and he's put it in, immersed it in a cleaner. Can that kill the bristles? So the question, I'm just going to leave that with you and find out
okay.
what we all should be doing.
Well, here's the thing, and I think that we're probably one of the most open brush companies for brush cleaning. I don't think that a lot of the other brush companies talk about cleaning brushes, and I don't know why, really, because I think it should be an open topic, mainly because I think when you are investing a good amount of money in your brushes, that again as a tool, you know, there is a part of me that says don't clean them because then you'll buy more, ha ha, but the other part of me then says actually, you know, what we would want you to do is look after them, get the most from them, but also then have a realistic idea of a lifespan of a brush, be okay about the fact that it's reached the end of its lifespan, and then reinvest, you know. So I would never want someone to feel shortchanged that they invest in decent brushes and then within the first month haven't cleaned them and they're having to reinvest, because that really is crazy. It would put you off wanting to buy decent brushes again, you know. So I think my first tip is to look under your sink. You will no doubt have some Murphy's Oil soap. I honestly wish that I had created Murphy's Oil soap, because I would be a very rich lady if I did. And I honestly think I could have shares in that company for the amount of people I recommend in the States to Murphy's Oil soap. I know it's a hardwood cleaner, But there's something about it. It does clean oil, and it's very inexpensive. For like $9 or $10, you can get a really big tub. Like I say, the chances are you've already got it under your sink. That right. stuff is really quite great because it cleans them and it conditions them, and that's the key thing I want to, you know, bring home to folks, is that the conditioning is just as important as the cleaning. And why that is because if you are cleaning a brush, and going back to what that gentleman had asked in the initial question of, you know, over cleaning, if you do over clean, and we can look into that further, but if you do over clean, you can actually dry the brush out, which will make it splay. You know, the only way I can say it is bringing it back to basics. If we split it down to natural hair and synthetic hair, your natural hair, you should treat like the hair on your head, okay? Now, this is quite an open statement and one that I am friends with the guys at Gamblin about, but is that Gamsol can certainly clean brushes rapid. There's no doubt, you know, as a plein air painter myself, I get it. When you're out and about, there is nothing really that's much quicker than Gamsol to rinse your brushes through with, and it cleans them. The issue I then have is what you do after you've used Gamsol, because even though it's odorless, it is still a mineral spirit. So it will totally strip any of the natural oils that are in a natural hairbrush. Now, if we then divert to the synthetics, yes, okay, arguably they don't have any oils in them because they're a synthetic, but the coating around the individual fibers is stripped with mineral spirit again. So this isn't a slam really towards Gamsol, but it is more of a just look at what you're actually using. And again, I would say there are plenty of other alternatives. Now, this is where you then would have to split. I'm sorry, it's really not a one easy answer, so tell me if I'm going too quick, but you might... If anyone's listening, might want to write this down and re-listen. But basically, I would say that you then have to look at if you're an outdoor painter versus a studio painter. Now, if you're outdoors, again, you're not going to catch me with anything else in my Terps jar than Gamsol because it's just so quick and easy. There is one other alternative that we found is just as good, but they don't sell it widely in the States, I'm afraid. We sell it, but it's called Zest-It. Now, Zest-It is...
Wait, what's it called? Odorless. What's that called?
Zest-It.
Again, see me?
Zest-It, like as in the zest of a lime or
Got
lemon.
It.
Zest-It. And
Got
if you type that in on our website, you'll find Zest-It. We use them because they are very similar in model to us. Mother was a painter, was getting chronic headaches and migraines, and the daughter had gone to university and studied chemistry, realized that her mum was getting such chronic headaches and thought that she could come up with something that was something different that won't give her headaches but will still clean her brushes. And they found it, and it's not harmful. Now, again, you wouldn't be drinking the stuff, but you could certainly leave it with the jar open. It actually, I don't know whether you're familiar with the alcoholic liquor amaretto.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad you said for sure, because I love that drink. But basically, it smells like don't drink it. Okay. Now that and Gamsol are on par with each other for cleaning. But I will say Zest-It does have some sort of condition within it that then again conditions the brushes somewhat compared to the Gamsol totally stripping the fiber. Why I mention that versus the studio painter is because when you're indoors, usually you have more time to have to worry about this sort of thing than you do with the change in light and all the rest of it when you're outdoors. So as a studio painter, you've really no excuse. I certainly wouldn't be using Gamsol indoors anyway. I know folks do. But I will say, always remember when I'm trying to talk about these things, it's because I've spoken to a mass of people. So if you say, well, I use Gamsol and so does my friend and neither of us seem to get headaches, that's great, you know. It's just like if you don't use plastic gloves, that the latex gloves, that's fine.
Right.
But with the amount I'm on the road, trust me, I know people who have had cadmium poisoning. And I know people who get chronic, you know, from not wearing gloves. And I know people who get chronic headaches from using mineral spirits, Gamsol and all the rest of it inside. So there are alternatives that you could be doing, you know. And one of them, luckily for us, isn't so expensive, and you can get it in the supermarkets, is safflower oil. You know, like you mentioned, or linseed oil, basically any lighter oil, because oil cleans oil. That's what we've got to remember here. So, you know, I would say that you could easily have a jar of oil by the side of your easel. I know that it takes a little longer, but as a studio painter, usually the process is somewhat slower and more thought out than it would be, you know, for a quick draw or a plein air piece anyway. And it all boils down to habit. We don't want to change what we already do, but trust in me, it's cheaper. It has the very similar characteristics that Gamsol does in the sense that the oil will lower to the bottom. You can pour out the top into another jar. You can save it and reuse. And it is certainly cheaper. But it's, if anything, actually, it's better, and I've spoken to Michael Hardin about this quite a lot. It's actually better for your paintings if you use oil, because think of it like this. The old masters back in the day, they weren't using Gamsol. They didn't have that. You know, they were using an oil of some sort.
Interesting.
But again, it really is just trying to break the habit of what you're currently using, and we all go for ease. I get it. I wanted to mention one thing that you'd said, that the gentleman had said about, you know, if you've left a brush for so long, how do you, you know, revive it type thing to condition it and things. First thing is, I would say to anybody right now who's never done this before, this weekend, if we're on Thursday now, you know, it's a great excuse this Sunday, to actually take your brushes, any brushes that you're currently using and haven't been using for a while, get like a, it's like a rolling pin tray, yeah? And you can either use, and again, this is specific for your American listeners because we don't sell this in England, but Terpenoid Natural is really great. I mean, it looks disgusting. It's like greeny kind of phlegmy look. It's gross and gunky. But you can either line your tray with Terpenoid Natural or just with either baby conditioner, you know, like shampoo and conditioner, baby conditioner. And you can fully immerse your brushes. And the reason why I say on a rolling pin tray, you know, am I explaining the tray properly? You know what kind of tray I mean?
It sort of has a...
Like a paint tray, a paint roller tray.
Like a paint roller tray. Okay, yes.
Right, sure.
Yeah, like
one
a paint roller tray that
the
you
other.
Can...
Yeah.
That's it. You can put the brushes, lay them flat on the end there, and they'll fully immerse it in the liquid that you put in. Again, conditioner or Terpenoid Natural, and leave them there to soak. Now, if you're scared about it, leave them for half an hour. I wouldn't be worried about it. I'd leave them there for a full 24 hours, and you'd be amazed how that Terpenoid Natural is incredible. I think it should be called the brush reviver because it really does break down. If you've been really naughty and left your oils, you know, for a long time, it really does break it down. But it looks disgusting.
Yeah, well, small price
I'm gonna
to
ask,
pay. I mean, so it's ugly. Go ahead.
I'm going to ask a question from Polly Gentry, and it's about smushing brushes. So she bought a set of these wonderfully named smushing brushes, one in each side. And the description from the website is sometimes known as a smudger, a tinter, or a blender. This versatile brush can be used in all mediums and is available in sizes small, medium, and large. In decorative painting, you would tend to use it as a dry brush and for softening edges. But this brush is good, little all-rounder, and useful in any medium. For oil and acrylic painters, if you load this brush full of pigment, it'll be great for your seascapes, stippling, clouds, highlights, and shading. For watercolorists, practice loading with dry pigment to get a similar effect. So Polly bought these specifically from the description to help with painting clouds and oils, and partly because they sounded interesting, of course, and she just wanted to try them out.
Mm-hmm.
She found the large one most useful as dry brush for softening edges and recommended it for that. I guess she also loves the domed head. And she's hoping there might even be a larger version of this brush. So first question is, do Rosemary and Company have plans to make a larger version?
No. Just be happy with what we're giving you. No, I'm joking.
There you go.
Oh, you're so funny.
Well, what would we call it? I mean, we already tried to limit that question by calling them small, medium, large. So now
extra
we're going to have
large.
Extra large. Extra large. here's the truth. If we get asked enough to do something, we'll do it. I'm definitely more the person to be on board with bringing on new ranges. Mum is like, okay, when are these people going to be happy?
Oh, God. The squeaky wheel gets greased.
Yeah, I would
say,
Polly, if you get enough of your friends to email in and ask for this brush, that you know, that then there's a high chance that we would do it. Again, I will say, though, joking aside, you know, we could always make one-offs on these things, but I would say to Polly, specifically about this kind of question, and it's a great, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about and what gets me out of bed in the morning and excites me about growing ranges. But I will say, at times, always give it a thought as to why we haven't done something larger or something smaller. And I say that again, reason being, if we've gone with a large with that, yes, I get what you're thinking. It might be that the large just isn't big enough for the piece that you're doing. Now, it might be that if we'd have gone any larger, the effect that you're trying to get with that brush just wouldn't work. AKA, if we'd have gone with a larger ferrule, we'd have obviously had to tighten, you know, put more hair in to tighten it and make it a thicker brush. Would it then have given the same mark? It could have been too floppy and too loose. It wouldn't have then had the tight, packed feel that the smoosher does. Do you see what I'm saying?
Got it. Sure.
Now, but that being that aside, I know for a fact that it would work on this brush. But I will say, again, with it being a softer badger hair, you've also got to think of the price point on these things. And if we did an extra large, it would probably be double the price of a large. How many people would want to pay that?
Sure. No,
true.
That's really smart. Do you have any further advice on how to use these brushes?
Yeah, the whole reason why we brought out the smooshing brush range was so that you didn't have to ruin your good brushes, basically, for blending. So the idea was, it was pretty easy for us because it was basically make a blunt brush. And we're like, oh, we can do that. We've got plenty of experience in making blunt brushes. So we came up with a range that we knew was going to be affordable for people that meant that they wouldn't be blending with any of their points that you know, realistically needed to keep a point, or any of the other brushes that couldn't quite do the mark that they needed to specifically to do with blending. You're not, obviously, if anyone even looks up the word smoosh, which, by the way, is smoosh, S-M-O-O-S-H, not smooch, because I've had a lot of people ask me if we're bringing out a new smooching line. So, you know, you'll see you're not going to get any kind of fine line or detail with that kind of brush. But the idea then being that the drier the brush, I know that Polly had mentioned she'd found that when it was drier, she found it most useful. And that's certainly, you know, the case. Saying that, you could probably manipulate and push paint more if you did load it, but it's certainly great for clouds and for skies. I also wanted to say some folks use them in pastels as well. Over the years, we've become more friendly towards our pastel friends. Because obviously very few people in pastel use brushes, but there are tools that they then try and use, AKA, you know, kitchen roll or something like that, that actually there is a brush that we could bring out for that. So Sue Lyon, for example, uses the smooshing brushes with her pastels. If you ever look, she's just done a beautiful one of her cat. But if I was to tell you, one of the leading guys with the smooshing brush is C.W. Monday, and then look up C.W. Monday's work. And you'll get an idea of the looseness of the stroke. Now, obviously, we created a Monday mop for him, which was a goat hair, which is more of an oval shape because he didn't need the tightness so much. But he certainly would fly back and forth to the smooshes if he needed something a little more tighter. Does that answer your question, Polly?
I bet it does.
I bet it does.
Yeah. Do you have any links to artists and what they do with them? Do you have any?
Yeah, like I say, I would say C.W. Monday certainly uses them. Sue Lyon uses them. I'm trying to think, and I'd given this some thought. Here's the truth. I think a lot of artists have got them at hand. I don't necessarily think that the smooshing brush is a staple brush that you can't live without. I know Cheryl Klein of the Klein Academy in Los Angeles has used them for quite some time. But then since then, we've gone on to make the Klein Cloud 9 brushes, right? So it's, again, it's an evolution of these smooshes are great, but I need something bigger. So Polly, don't ask me to make you a Polly brush. But although that's got a ring to it, but the main thing is that I think it's certainly a handy brush to have, you know, that isn't so expensive, really is good for blending. But I don't think many artists would advocate that it's their go-to brush as such. You know, it's more of a clean-up brush. It's a good brush to have on hand. And it's certainly one that will last a long time. It doesn't matter if, you know, in fact, the more you use it, probably the cooler the effect with that brush.
Right.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. It's really fun. I didn't even know.
I hadn't really focused on it, but now I want one. So we'll see. It's amazing.
Okay, everyone's going to be emailing in for asking for an extra large. I can see it now.
Well, I hope not. I'll be the first one to say sometimes, you know, more isn't better.
Well, so, again, though, I actually do think that that's possible. So genuinely, if enough people wanted the extra large, we would probably do it.
Okay.
Got it.
I like that. Boy, I'm already like looking ahead and realizing I blew it on a few of the questions we're going to ask you. But I remember when you had Mongoose Harris, and you had like a little stash, I believe. Are they all gone? Is Mongoose?
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. So what, when you had someone who really loved that, and they were expensive, but luxurious, wonderful brushes, what's the substitute? What's the go-to if you can't get what a Mongoose hairbrush offered?
Okay. Well, firstly, I want to say that like with any natural hair, they go through a life cycle, okay? So I can already tell you we have to buy hair 2 years in advance to when we're making brushes with it. And, for example, at the moment, Mum and I are finding it really difficult to get squirrel hair for in 2 years' time. Why is that important? Well, if it becomes to a point where it's so expensive, we then won't carry a range because no one would buy the brushes. We can already forecast and see 2 years ahead usually with brush making and hair buying, as it were. The reason why I bring that into play is because in 2 years' time, watercolorists will be up in arms because they'll say, oh, you know, you're not stuck in squirrel hair anymore, and it's the one brush I used to go to. And I could politely say, well, we've known about it for 2 years, and we have been kindly and quietly pushing you onto different things, and we've brought out different ranges. But ultimately, you know, if we ended up buying the hair at that price, no one would pay because, you know, you could be talking triple, quadruple the price. And eventually, actually, it then just goes out of business for a while. And then, like with any of the animal hair that we use, they're rodents usually. So at that point, it'll then come full round, full circle. So why that's important with Mongoose is within the next 2 to 3 years, we predict that Mongoose will be fully back in the system. That's a prediction, okay? And I'd say an educated guess from two highly intelligent people, Mother and I, ha-ha. But who knows? We've got to play that one by ear, you know? But what I will say is we have come up with substitutes. We've had to because so many of our oil artists were just relying and banking on, you know, especially the long flats that you know, we used to produce in the Mongoose. So you've got the Master's Choice, which we've kept the same name, which is now a badger blend. So it's actually a blend of female and male tails. Okay. The reason why we blended them is because it gave a softer but still a firm enough feel, soft enough to blend but firm enough to be able to push paint onto your canvas. And they are the closest thing with natural hair that we've managed to come towards. I will say this, and I really mean this in a really kind and lovely way. A lot of people who had never tried Mongoose before have got no idea that the Master's Choice is a substitute and are absolutely thrilled with them. It's only really a couple of people who so relied on the Mongoose that are not willing to waver from that will be able to say, yeah, I can certainly feel a difference. But I would say even half of those people would then say, but actually this is a pretty damn close substitute, you know. So some of it is just hearsay from your teacher that they always had used that. And it's like anything. You get used to something you don't want to change. That's the one thing that, you know, no one really likes is having to change things. So us included, trust me. So I would say a natural substitute is your Master's Choice. Now, we have since then come up with a synthetic substitute, and I'm going to say it slowly so that if anyone wants to write it down. They have Solbrite hotcakes. When we launched them, Mum and I knew we'd got it right, but we didn't think we'd get it this right, which is the Eclipse Extra Long Combers. Literally, anybody who used to use our 279, you know, Mongoose Long Flats, go for the Eclipse Extra Long Combers. They are thin, they are long, they have got the right snap. They are the same price, if not cheaper. I should say less expensive, because, you know, cheap's not a great word to describe something, but at the same time, they really are less expensive, you know.
Yeah.
And what's so good about them is that we've actually teethed, if you can imagine, we've backcombed the ends of the hairs to give that comb effect so that it does pick up the paint and knock off the paint like the 279s used to do, you know, the original Mongoose used to do. So although the natural does do that, some people might find the natural actually a little too soft. That's probably one of the only feedbacks we get comparing it to, whereas the Eclipse Extra Long Combers, I mean, if we blindfolded someone, I think they would be hard pushed to know the difference.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so
happy days. But that took 4 years, by the way, ladies.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Margaret.
I can say it now, but it was 4 years of really trying and testing. I mean, I must have sent Jeremy 10 to 15 batches of different fibers and hairs to say, tell me if this is right, no, this isn't right. Tell me if this is right, no, this is right. You know, and I'm like, please tell me these are right. And he's like, I think you've got it.
Okay, so Margaret uses and loves the traveling watercolor brushes. Any chance there may be more sizes available? And I think I could answer this question, Margaret. The squeaky wheel gets grease. If you and all your friends...
You know what I will say, Margaret? Do you know what I will say, though, genuinely about this? When I saw this particular question, or, you know, I had an inkling that you're going to ask me this question, I thought, do you know what? If you looked at our travel range, when I first came on board, my mum, we had six travel brushes, right? We now have 22, and my mum is reluctant every time I say, we need this. She's like, no one will buy them, Sim. They don't need them. I'm like, yep, they do. So we've bought on 22 ranges, and the reason why I say that is because proudly I can say this. We have the most variety in travel brushes across the board compared to anybody else, you know, which I think is no mean feat.
No, I'm going to jump in and say my bad.
But
honestly,
as normal, you still want more.
No, I don't. I'm gonna tell you, this is where I fell down on the job, because I didn't really research well enough how many you had. I must have remembered
I'll let you off.
When there was maybe only a dozen, because do you know what? Not only do I love them, and maybe it's because they come with their own cap and they're distinct from my other brushes, and I don't treat myself to scads of brushes, I mean the watercolors, because I'm not a very good watercolorist. However, I give these as gifts all the time. Just, you know, a simple, like a medium size, maybe a number 6 or 8 or something, and I'll like wrap it up for my friends who are much more skillful, and they all get, you know, swoony, like you've given them, I don't know, you know, precious ore from some magic mountain. But after that, they all become converts. So for me, I was thinking, I didn't realize how extensive your collection was. So my bad. Your mother's right. You've got plenty now, and I'll probably be ordering more. I don't know what else to say.
Well, you know, the thing is as well, I think with the travel brushes, that's so funny about it is that it's not just watercolorists that use them. I think, obviously, most of them are for watercolor, just with them being Klinsky Sable, a lot of them. But I think a lot of plein air artists have cottoned onto them as well and thought, actually, if you're out and about and you haven't got chance to set up your whole easel and the whole kit, you know, and you know you haven't got 3 or 4 hours to do a quick piece, but you want to just do a sketch on the go. And I know that you ladies have probably heard about the new movement, and it's not particularly new, but it's certainly snowballed is urban sketching. You know, and I mean, everywhere I go now, there's an urban sketcher on a corner street. It's so cool to see. And a lot of these people aren't just using pencils that, you know, they can dip in some water anymore, or a brush that they know that by the time they fly it in their bag, it will get ruined a couple of times in. You know, so I think that's where a lot of oil painters have also thought, well, I'm going to just use it for a little quick sketch, whether that be in oil, acrylic, or watercolor, you know, or just even to manipulate my pencil work. So I've got a brush that there's something about a brush. I know I'm going to sound totally biased here, but as an artist, when you need your fix, you need your fix. And if you've got a little travel brush on the go, you've still got something with you. You know what I mean?
Isn't it heaven?
Thank you. I will say, though, there is no doubt in the last 5 years, travel brushes have become, you know, a sensational product line for us. You know, we sell them
good.
Like hotcakes, really. We can't make them often quick enough. But, yeah.
Well, I think, yeah, to your point, everybody's trying to figure out how to kind of be able to travel light and get their fix.
Oh, sure.
Right. All right. Here's my next question, which a lot of people, it seems, are asking this whenever we talk brushes. Even if I'm at a workshop, people will start, you know, asking the brush questions. So I always have a hard time. I want to sort of ask you if you could make a quick recommendation. If someone is using, let's say, the ivories, because that's one that I still love and have plenty of, I was kind of wondering, like, if you want to go to a better brush, what would that be? I'm guessing you're going to say evergreen, but then I'm going to say, and if you wanted to go to a quote unquote better brush than that, like, what is the rank up in terms of your, and I'm going to be specific to oil brushes because I think that's what I certainly get asked about the most.
Yeah. Okay. It's a real quick answer and it's an easy one.
Good.
For me to answer, but not for you to perhaps, you're probably going to think, oh, I still didn't get the answer I needed. What I will say is there is no line of brushes that we make that aren't what our professionals are using. Now, that's a good and a bad thing at the same time. So to put it in real terms, what I mean is if you're using the ivory, I can't recommend a better synthetic than the ivory. The evergreen are exactly the same as the ivory, except for they're softer. So the characteristics of them wearing down, being easy to clean, having this, you know, a good spring or snap, keeping a sharp edge, etc., are universal. The only one I could really say, well, there's two actually, more I think about it, but the only two I could really say that there is a difference between quality of is the bristle, which I mentioned. So your lower grade bristle would be your hog, then it would be your chunking, then it would be your classic, and then it would be your ultimates. Just based on student grade up to professional grade. And the only real way I can justify that is by saying if someone like Scott Christensen is telling me that ultimates are the best bristle he's used in his life, I'm going to listen to him, you know.
Correct.
But then at the same time, someone like Jeremy would say, well, and this is Jeremy Lipkin, he would say that the classic long flats are the best bristle he's ever used. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that Scott's wrong and Jeremy's right? No, it then is horses for courses. You know what I mean? Arguably, there is a difference in grade between, and I don't want to deviate too much to it, but with watercolour, if you go from golden synthetic to then a red sable blend, which is a sable and synthetic 50-50 mix, then you would hop to the red sable, pure red sable, and then the cream of the crop, then the Rolls-Royce is your Kalinske sable. So that in watercolour, there is that gradient of, you know, students would start at one price point and end at the next. But the reason then I would say is because a size 12 could be $7 or $8 in a golden synthetic, but in a Kalinske sable, you could be looking at $50-$60. So arguably you have to have that ladder. Whereas a size 12 in the ivory, the evergreen, you know, they're going to be the same. The Eclipse is a slightly more expensive synthetic, not because it's any better, may I add, purely because it's been dyed 4 times. So the process, as opposed to the ivory being sandblasted and in their original state, the evergreen dyed once. That the man hours, if you know, for want of a better phrase, is less in those brushes as opposed to the Eclipse that's then dip dyed 4 times. So that really is then a price reflection of human control, you know. Don't get me wrong, there are certain ranges where I would say they're nice if you can afford them. But you don't have to. Yep. You don't have to go for them. So the ebony is out there for oil painters who want the feel of sable but can't afford or don't want to pay the price of sable. Not just necessarily can't afford, but that's what the ebony was created for, and that's a mix of wolf and goat hair, you know. So whereas the master's choice, the badger blend, is absolutely beautiful, but it. Again, it is an expensive brush, but it will last you a long time. It certainly, does wear down very nicely. And, you know, it's the sort of brush that will be in your arsenal for a long time. And there's very few brushes that give off the same feel or effect, you know.
Yep,
so,
for sure.
I hope, cool. I hope that can, well, it's a really difficult answer, you know, or question to answer the ranking of an, especially in oil brushes. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
I would say that you're not doing yourself a disservice by using the Ivory range or the Evergreen range.
Right.
And again, I can only really back that up by saying we've so many of our professionals, you know, that literally rely on these day to day that I think it would almost be an insult to them, too, if I said, oh, well, actually, the Ivory is a lower grade. Because, you know, when you've got someone like Daniel Keats who absolutely loves the Ivory, well, okay, but what do we do better? Well, we don't really do anything better. It's usually then a case of that the hair is more expensive or the man hours are more, you know?
Got it. Isn't it interesting? So,
I don't know.
I
live and eat and sleep and breathe this. So I don't know if all your listeners are going to be falling asleep.
You know,
I feel like I'm taking this very seriously, but I want to make sure that I give you really good answers. And, you know, people aren't writing in tomorrow saying, Rosemary's daughter needs the sack. Get rid of her, you know. She doesn't know what she's talking
about. Don't worry about that.
Can you believe it? But I just want to say, when we last spoke, I'd only been with the company for half a year. And actually, I'd been with the company since I was 12, but full-time for half a year. And it's so funny now to think, you know, I'm coming up to 6 years. Where has this time gone? I just can't believe it. I'm like 28
it's
and
amazing.
I've got a dog now. I was 22, I think, when I spoke to you guys. With some crappy boyfriend, no doubt, renting a flat that I couldn't afford. And now I own my own house and I've got a dog.
There you go. Well,
oh, how,
you know,
life changes.
So much has changed. And when we spoke to you, you were talking about relocating your business and finding a place out in the country. And you had, like, ideas and dreams of workshops. Tell us about that, because a lot of that has actually come to fruition. You have a
new
office.
Unbelievable.
You must have a lot more staff. What's it like?
So when I last spoke to you, I think we had 6 staff. We've now got 25 full-time staff.
No way.
That's crazy in itself, trust me. That's 25, you know, at the end of the day, Mum and I think of it like this. That's 25 people that are relying on our company, you know, to feed their families. It's a lot of pressure, you know, not just to produce the product for our customers, but also to ensure it's one thing, a company employing 25 part-time people, but these are full-time people that come in at 8:30 every day and they leave at 5, you know? That in itself has been a huge learning curve, because, again, although Mum's been doing this for a long time, we never had the amount of staff. So HR has changed. I know you guys know it because you're in America. HR's tighter there than anywhere in the world. But trust me, it's that in its own remit has grown. You know, it's like our IT department. If I were to tell you, 5 years ago to the day, we had one webmaster who was in every other Friday, okay, to keep our internet going, like our website going. When I came on board, he didn't like me at first, but I made him do 2 days a week in-house. And then by 6 months, I'd said to him, we need you 5 days a week in-house. We now have one full-time webmaster, and we've got 2 full-time graphic designers.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Oh,
so that's just the design team, the IT department, you know. It's crazy how this evolution's gone, but I've totally forgotten what you're – relocating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we moved from – this is so funny when I think about it, and I've actually got a photograph I should release sometime of our old office, but we moved from the top floor of my mum's old house, which I can only ever describe to people as like a rabbit warren. It was this tunnels and duck in here, and you could – you know, and I used to sit at a desk. I remember Mum said to me, you don't need a computer, and I said, I think I'm going to get quite a lot of emails, so I probably – should buy a laptop. And she said, well, if you want a laptop, you can buy it out of your wages. So I bought a laptop. And I think my first week at work, I got like 3 emails the whole week. And I was like, oh, this is exciting. I'm getting emails. Now I'm dealing with probably 150 a day.
Oh, yeah.
it's, it's totally changed. But I remember where my desk was. You know, I had to actually, I can't describe it, but it was an alcove in the wall, and I had to duck my head under the alcove to be able to sit up straight so I could sit at my desk, because I didn't have a desk. It was a plank of wood against two pieces of wood that we dug out the side of the wall.
Oh, I love
so
it.
Anyway, so we've moved from there, and we're now in the most beautiful location in the Yorkshire Dales, in a gorgeous village called Colin, which is... It's on the border of North and West Yorkshire. It's an hour door-to-door from Manchester Airport, which is brilliant for me for when we travel and things. And it,
sure.
It really is just this dream location where Mum lives in half of the building. We work in the other half. And literally, just before Christmas, we got huge news that we could build a huge workshop in the grounds that will be hidden from this house, because this house is you don't have it in America, I don't think, so much, but it's a listed building, and it's a Grade 2 star listed building, which is one further than that, which means even to, like, release the paint off a window to be able to open an old shuttered window, you've got to get permission from the local council. It's protected by English Heritage, basically.
So we have historic, registration, so yours is even tighter.
Yeah, I mean, this building is Georgian time, so it really is a piece of art in itself that rightly so, English Heritage don't want you to tamper with in any sense. But I will say, Mum and I are, especially my mum, she's the most, if you could ever imagine this building being owned by somebody in 2019, it's my mum, because she wants to bring it right back to what it used to be. She's not the sort of person that would just knock through a
fabulous.
Wall because it was practical. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So we've moved premises, which has allowed us to be in the heart of the Dales and allowed me to have the dream of, I basically said to Mum a while ago, Mum had always wanted somewhere that people would come to us, and that was her dream, And I've gone one further with that and said, well, I'm getting tired of going out to America as much as I do and traveling and things. Maybe we could invite people to teach here. And Mum was like, oh, yeah, it's a great idea. Who do you want to get? So I said, well, we're going to start with my best mate. So Jeremy came and taught two workshops as my pro, he was like my little guinea pig. just to see, test the waters on what people did or didn't like, and what we should or shouldn't do in a workshop, and expectations and price, and a ton of different factors. Because actually the workshops in themselves have become a separate business to Rosemary & Co. now,
Right.
I bet.
So
well,
this year
that's
we've
great.
Got...
So tell us more about your workshops, because is there a list that's published on your website?
I was going to say, last year we had Michael Klein gave two workshops in Mum's Orangery that she's built. So that was really quite beautiful. It's a really beautiful south-facing orangery, which sounds annoying with the light, but actually how we've put the cloth on the ceiling, it diffuses the light quite beautifully. So Michael Klein gave two last year. Laurie Putnam gave one. I'm trying to think. Who else? I can't believe it. Michelle Dunaway obviously gave one, which was fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This year coming, I'm really excited because we've got Laurie coming back, but I've done Laurie's with a twist. Laurie's workshop sold out pretty much overnight, which, I'm not saying that no one expected, but it was really quite phenomenal. So
awesome.
I thought for the people who missed out last time, we would do another one with Laurie this year. But instead of doing it where we're based, I thought it would be cool if we went still in Yorkshire, but to the East Coast. So to Whitby, Staithes. I don't know if you've ever heard of Staithes. But it's really somewhere that you should look up.
No.
Ripon. Yeah, it's not too far from Ripon. I'd say it's probably an hour from Ripon. But it's Turner used to paint there. Turner painted where we are now. He got all over Yorkshire. But to give you an idea, a lot of English watercolour masters especially, but oil masters too, use Staithes as one of the places where they can really just go wild with the scenery. There's a really phenomenal English painter called David Curtis. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
If you haven't, you need to Google him. But he spends a lot of his time in staves. There's another great English painter too called Haydee Jo Summers, and she spends time there too. So
Yeah.
We're going to take Laurie's group out over there, and I've actually got 3 spaces left on that workshop. That's a slight plug, but just, you know, I thought I'd mention it. Steph Birtle's come in. Her workshop sold out, which is amazing.
Oh,
and we're going to do painting around the grounds of Rosemary's house, you know, here. And we've got a couple of friends that live locally that have got beautiful gardens, so we'll go there in the local allotment and things. And then a dear friend of mine called Michael John Angel, who owns the Angel Academy in Florence, owns and created. He actually was one of the co-founders of the Florence Academy, and since then, in the last 20-odd years, has created the Angel Academy. Well, he's coming over for a week to teach a Vermeer workshop, which I'm so excited about because I really think...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's actually been flown all around the world, you know, Japan, Australia, you name it, to give this presentation that he's coming to do in Yorkshire. He actually specializes in Vermeer and Caravaggio. So we really just couldn't get better than Michael John Angel to come and teach a workshop, you know, on that subject. So Mum and I are like, oh, we're going to sit at the back and listen to it, because he does all presentations about Vermeer as well, you know. So,
great.
So isn't it amazing? We're just pinching ourselves. And then Jeremy's coming back. So Jeremy's going to come back and do 2, potentially 3 workshops as well.
Awesome.
And there's one other workshop that's really exciting.
What?
That is a secret, but I could give you a clue if you want.
Okay.
I haven't announced it yet.
Okay.
So we've got... If I narrow it down, do you think you could try and guess who it is?
I'll try.
Okay. They are fairly young. They're in their 30s.
Yeah.
They are based out of Chattanooga, but they live in Brooklyn now.
Who is it, Margaret?
They trained with Richard Schmid.
All I can think of is the who's training with...
She's saying they, though.
No.
That's why I'm confused. They.
Well, she doesn't want to specify he or she.
Oh,
he.
Oh, it's not 2 people. It's 1. Okay.
It's a he. Okay.
It's a he.
Who trained with Richard Schmid?
Yeah,
you have to
Richard
tell
Schmid's
us,
protege.
Daniel, all I can
think
of is Daniel Keyes.
1 before that.
Oh. I know, and I can't think of who it is. Casey Bell.
All
right,
wow.
That's what I said. I did say that earlier. So that's exciting.
Yeah, so Casey and I talked over Christmas, and Casey's actually stopped teaching workshops, but he said he would break his rule of teaching workshops if it meant he got to come out and hang out in Yorkshire for a week. So we were like, okay, you can break your rule. So we're in talks at the moment for Casey to come over as well this year. So. It's amazing. Honestly, ladies, I can't tell you. To have these people want to come, can you imagine?
No, I can't. I mean, I think this
That's
is phenomenal.
That's so wonderful.
Everything
yeah.
you
so
said to us has come true. You know, you
yeah.
talked about all
yeah,
of this.
It really has. It's
so,
amazing.
That's
I can't
wonderful.
Believe the time is flying by. But I'm going to jump to a question that I'm just dying to have you answer, which is the same question I asked you 5 years ago. Has Prince Charles tried your brushes yet? Honestly.
I am so glad you have put this on as a question, because I have
yeah.
an update.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Two things. He may not have directly requested a catalogue or bought brushes, but last Christmas, I didn't know what to buy my mum for Christmas, because what do you buy someone who's got everything or could buy it themselves, right? So I bought my mum an afternoon at Highgrove with champagne at 2 o'clock. And then my mum and my stepdad, Mark, were allowed to walk around the gardens of Highgrove for 2 hours. It was a security armed tour. There was only 12 of them on the tour. And then they end up obviously in the gift shop, right?
Uh-huh.
And mum took a catalogue with her and posted it through Prince Charles's front door. I am not joking you.
The
update is that we are one step closer to Prince Charles approving and using our brushes. We figured that by the time he's king, he will be using our brushes. But
that's
I have
true.
Other good news.
What's that?
Prince Philip's PA, which is obviously, our queen's husband, Sir Prince Philip, who we technically could call king, but we don't, has requested a catalogue and has since ordered it. And we have sent brushes to Buckingham Palace for Prince Philip.
That oh, my
is
goodness.
Fantastic.
Good for you. That's so cool.
So there you go. So we might not have the king, but we have the queen's husband.
Oh, that's
there
awesome.
You go.
But I don't know whether
that's
we're meant to tell anyone. So keep that quiet.
Okay, so, yeah, keep it quiet.
It
we
quiet.
Won't tell anyone. We promise. So,
Simi,
now that
fantastic.
You're selling to royalty, what are the
yes.
future plans for your business?
Well, obviously Prince Charles by the time he's king. That
true,
would be
true.
Our main focus. No, I'm joking. If I had to try and narrow it down to really think about, let's just think about this year alone. And I've already had to do that to, try and set out some goals for our company and for our staff and things. One of the biggest things for us packaging-wise and environmentally is to go plastic-free. Which is huge, I think. It's something that Mum and I are both really quite passionate about. Every brush that leaves the workshop will go out in biodegradable bags. We won't use sellotape anymore. We'll be using, paper tape that Amazon, kind of thing used. And just
yep.
everything that we're doing, we're trying to then become more eco-friendly with. And we figured if we could do it, a lot of companies will be able to do it, and we should all be trying to make our, little effort in that. So that's
yep.
to go plastic-free.
That's so,
another
so
cool
funny,
thing
Jamie,
is
I'm,
that since
I have to add, I'm
sorry.
Trying to do the same thing in our house. I'm trying to go plastic
yeah,
free.
It's driving me nuts, honestly.
It's
every
really
market
hard.
I go into, I'm trying to dodge plastic.
Yeah, it's hard, but we're making progress.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Well, I figured, I actually took 3 months out at the beginning of last year and went traveling around South America.
Yeah.
And when I went to Patagonia, I was there, okay, most breathtaking views, and there was just carrier bags on the sides of these most beautiful glacier lakes, and it just makes you want to cry. It's heart-wrenching. So another thing that's really cool is since we last spoke, we've launched a new website. We've actually got a new website coming out this month, and something that I wanted to tell you ladies and your listeners is about our new incentive or initiative, I don't really know the right phrase to use, but it's called Smart Points. So it's lowercase SM and then ART points. And the idea is that when you order through our website, our customers can start earning and accruing points on orders that they buy, and they can then spend the points throughout. So it'll be it's a good give back system. It's basically for every dollar you spend, you'll get 4 points, and you can then accrue those
fabulous.
Points. It'll be more
great
easy
idea.
To see in person. But it's also good for teachers because, I've built into the new website an affiliation system where your teachers, if they recommend you, they can earn 5% cash back on your order, to try, so that even if it just helps put petrol in the car, it's
yeah.
something that we can try and do to try and give back to the amount of teachers we have on board. So Smart Points is definitely up there. Obviously, just lining up more and more workshops for the coming years and building this new workshop in the grounds. Now we've been given the go-ahead. It's going to take 2 years. So we're going to start in the spring. We've got, all the drawings and things. We've now got to make sure that it will fit what we need. It's got to be future-proof, basically. And just looking after people. I think this year, Mum and I have both agreed that we're not necessarily, I know we say this, and I mean we try and say it every year, but I really want to try this year to not necessarily grow more ranges or bring on more brush sets. I mean, we have 120 brush sets now, which is quite
Whoa.
Remarkable because 5 years ago we didn't have any when you guys, when we last spoke.
Right.
So I think this year really Mum and I want to try and look after the folks we've got on board. I'm not saying
sure.
that we need to sit there and think, oh well, we have everyone we need. That's not the case. But actually the people we do have on board, I mean, we've just brought out a new set this week from Daniel Gerhardt's,
yep.
and it's like
right.
okay, yeah. Well, we can't not do that with Dan. But at the same time, you know, we've got people that have had brush sets with us for 6, 7, you know, 8 years, not necessarily online so much, but these guys have been shouting out about us, you know, relentlessly. And, you know, so this year, really, I want to spend my time looking after the people we already have. Yeah.
That's
and videos.
I mean,
videos. We're
yeah.
going to do as many videos as we can this year.
Are they going
That's
to be
wonderful.
Instructional in terms of technique?
Yeah, there's two types of videos we're going to do. We're going to film, obviously, more of the workshops, and I'm trying to see
yeah.
how we can figure out that the IT guys come and fly out with me to the States and film an event, and then we'll go into an artist studio. So if we went to Miami, for example, we'd knock on Cesar Santos's door, do an interview with him, do, you know, some brush talk, basically. But then
sure.
also on the flip side of that, brush talk will be, the best brushes to use for varnishing, or how do I, you know, what brushes do you use for signatures, and how do I use that brush, or how-to videos, basically. So that's
pretty
exciting. We've just invested a lot of money in all new camera gear, so the guys are learning every day about, you know, filming and videography. It's a whole new world for us, but for us to keep it professional, it's taken them, you know, maybe 6 to 8 months just to learn how to use the gear before we start properly, you know,
that's
launching
awesome.
Videos.
That's so great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So we have these questions that we ask every artist, and we want to ask them to you. So the first question is, what's your favorite color?
Yellow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Because
that's great.
Yeah,
why?
I think yellow because it's nice and bright. It's not the sort of thing I paint my house with, don't get me wrong. And I don't wear any yellow clothes then. But yellow does make me happy.
Oh,
it's just a happy, light,
great.
Bright color, you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
It is.
Oh, absolutely.
It really is.
And I think
right,
especially,
Jimmy.
Maybe I've said yellow as well because we're in the middle of winter here and it's freezing outside and there's no yellow
that
anywhere.
That would make sense.
Everything
you'll ask me
right
in
right
summer
now.
And I'd say gray.
I would be happy to ask you in the summer. All right, what music do you listen to? And do you listen to different music when you're at work versus maybe when you're,
yes.
you know, playing around in your car?
Yeah, I do. At work, especially because I, a lot of the time I'm having to be very serious, which sounds very boring, but if you know me well enough, I'm not very good at being boring. But I try and actually, in the last year or so, I think this is a, you know, me just maturing, I guess. But I actually do enjoy quite a lot of classical music. And I really, really enjoy, I don't know if you ladies have heard of Hans Zimmer, but anything that Hans Zimmer seems to bring out, you know, kind of like movie
mm-hmm.
soundtracks.
Oh.
He did the,
yeah.
the soundtrack for Gladiator. That'll give you an idea of it. Just really quite, I like music when I'm trying to concentrate that doesn't take me off track and probably without
yeah.
lyrics, because otherwise I end up singing along to it. So, whereas outside of work, I'm like all for Coldplay. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I'm gonna think, take that, you won't know them. Just, you know, regular stuff that's on the radio, not this poppy,
sure.
crappy stuff,
yeah.
but just, you know, regular stuff that's on the radio that people, I don't know whether you ladies have seen the new film by A Star Is Born.
Of course.
A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
And Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
both.
That kind of stuff. Like, you know, I think the soundtrack for A Star Is Born is amazing. So
I've been listening
Beautiful.
To it every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
That's
good.
So
there
cool.
you go, then.
That's wonderful. Okay, so if you could add a piece of art to your own personal collection, anyone, dead or alive, whose work would it be?
I would like to say if they were dead, I'd probably pick a really expensive one and sell it and, you know, share the money with many friends. But if I have
that
to
Monet
be totally
painting, yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm going to pick the most expensive. I'd probably have Sargent, you know, Madame
right.
X or something, just so that I could sell it for a ton of money. But or even worse, I should say better, but even worse, the new David Hockney, you know. But actually,
yeah.
there you go.
If I was having to be, you know, serious about it, there is a painting in the last 12 months that I honestly wish I could have afforded. Every time I think about it, I just want it. And the most annoying part is I know who owns it, so I know where they live. But it's one that you really should look up, and it's Richard Schmid's painting, because it was his retrospective actually just not so long ago in Vermont. So I actually saw it in life for the first time, and it really mm-hmm. is quite a large piece. But it's called Nancy in Scotland, and it's just Nancy, this small figure climbing over these beautiful, beautiful rocks, and just the whole thing sang to me. It was just so beautiful. There were so many purples in there that you wouldn't think, you know, and from a photograph it's hard to see, but I hope if you do look it up, you would probably see the need for wanting to own that piece. It's just sensational.
That's so nice.
Yeah, I think that would be my or obviously I could probably, when I stay at Jeremy's house, easily steal any one of the paintings in his house. But so far I haven't. We're okay.
I could
very easily, you know, oops, that must have slipped in the suitcase. Jeremy's like,
I don't know how that
six
happened.
Six pieces have gone missing since last year, Sim.
Seriously. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, now here's one that's a good follow-up to that. Because you seem to meet so many artists, if you could, if there's someone you haven't yet met, if it could be any living artist that you could meet up with, who is it that you'd most like to be introduced to?
Oh, I feel like I've already achieved that in some extent. If I could say, can I rephrase this question slightly?
Sure. Yes.
I used to have, and this is, again, someone who you perhaps haven't heard of, but I'd love you to put him on your radar. There was always an artist that, from since I was a child, I was in love with. So this was pre-me being friends with a lot of people, you know, and knowing what I know now and skill level and all the rest of it. And it's a chap called Michaela, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Del, D-E-L, Campo, C-A-M-P-O. Now, I can't say to you in any other way than that guy's work, I was just in love with it. Every single thing that he brought out, you know, I just loved the expressions, I loved the figures, I loved the colors and the vibrancy. And basically, long story short, my mum knew he was on my radar, and I never dreamt, you know, I always just thought, oh, it would be cool one day to meet him, but I knew he was Italian, right? Well, it turns out that he ended up marrying a lady that lived in Aberdeen, and he was actually in the UK for a couple of years. And by pure chance, we were actually at a show, and Mum had gone walking around the painting room, the painting tent, okay? And she comes back to the booth, and she goes, "You won't believe it." And I'm like, "What is it?" She says, "I've just met your biggest hero. Can you guess who it is?" And I'm like, "Oh God, this is a lose-lose situation, because if it's not the person, you know, how can you ever win on this one?" And Mum said, "Okay, you won't guess, because it's been so far out of your brain of us ever bumping into this person." She says, "Michaela Del Campo's here." And I'm like, "No." Aww. She said, "Honest to God." So I was such a fangirl, you know. I went over to, I mean, and it was so funny, because he was like, "You guys should not be a fan of me. It's quite the opposite, you know." And I'm like, "No, come round for tea. Come round for dinner." So that night he came round for dinner, and we obviously drank wine. And I'm like, "Oh, I'm in love with him." I just couldn't believe he was real and that I'd managed to meet him. And actually, it was unbelievable. But he'd done a sketch that weekend. And he said, "Oh, you know," I said, "How much do your sketches go for?" Thinking I'm never, ever going to be able to, like, just be grateful with what you've had, Simi, you know, like, you've met the guy, he gave you a catalogue, he'd signed it, you know, and I was so excited. And he said, "Actually, I would happily give you this piece for £100. And I was like, "What? No." I said, it's done. So I've actually had it framed since, and it's the biggest piece in my bedroom. And it's just, to me was a moment where I just could never have dreamed of meeting such a inspiration, really.
He's really good. I mean, the picture, the painting of the guy walking out of the water with the newspaper and the water behind him.
Oh, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, honestly, he is.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, he's really, really quite big in the UK, and especially in Spain. The Spanish people love him. I don't know how or why, but they just do. They love him. So he's from Italy. He now lives, I think, in Miami, actually. But he travels back here quite a lot for his daughter, who, I mean, it was horrible, but they've since parted. And so she's back in Aberdeen still. So he flies back quite regularly. But he's based in London, or I don't know where he is. But he literally only messaged me the other day saying, oh, you know, I'm going to be in London in a couple of weeks. Can we meet up? And I'm like, dang it, I'm in Brazil, you know. But it's such a cool feeling for me. I mean, yeah, Jeremy Lipkin's pretty cool. But in my mind, I didn't know Jeremy was a painter when I met him. I knew Michaela was, and he was just my biggest inspo. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
Oh, that's great.
Wonderful. It was so cool.
Well, that's dreams come true.
How has your life changed now that you have a studio work dog? Last question.
I have a life. That's the answer.
Yes.
Good for you.
I have
a
life.
No,
I have a reason.
Sorry.
I have to go home.
Yep, that's true.
You know?
Awesome.
Little Maxie's asleep by my feet here. And as soon as we finish this, you know, this chat, he's going to want to go out for the toilet. And then I need to figure out his dinner. And then I've got to go out for a walk with him. And it's like, it's just having a work-life balance. I mean, I'm only, you know, 3 weeks in with him. But, yeah, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why Santa, you know, gifted me Max was to try and bring me some sort of work-life balance of, you know, being able to pour out love onto something that wasn't just my job, which I've really struggled
with. That's right.
You know?
It's wonderful. It is so wonderful.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
all right.
So
well,
cute,
what a
know.
Pleasure this has been. Just a complete pleasure. I follow Max on Instagram. I want you to know I'm
good.
Looking forward to seeing. Yes, I want to see.
Can
how
I just do a quick shout out to Max's Instagram?
Sure.
Please do.
It's what did we call it now? Is it it's Max and Teddy.
That's right.
Oh, Max and Teddy Cockapoo, I think. Hang on, I have to get this right. It's Max and Ted, the Cockapoos. Now, we're both in at about 50 followers. I was about to say 50,000. That's Rosemary and Co. We've got 50 followers. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I think I was number 48, so that means you're growing.
Yay!
You're growing.
No, you know what, ladies? It's so nice to talk to you guys and... You know, I have to say, for me, what a privilege to be able to sit here and only come to you with good news. You know, everything's just been great since, you know, and I know some people haven't had that kind of fortune in 5 years. So it really is. All I can say is I hope we speak sooner. But if we don't, I hope in 5 years, who knows what's going to have happened.
We will speak sooner for sure. Congratulations.
For sure.
I'm so happy for you.
We've learned.
For you both. Yeah. It's amazing.
Thank you. And honestly,
well,
if Mum wasn't... In fact, she's just walked past. Do you want to quick say one sentence to her? Because she's just walking. She's actually hobbling
of
on
course.
Crutches. Because she's dislocated her knee and she's... I'm just helping her in. She's dislocated her knee.
Well,
she's got to have two knee operations. I think between Mum and I, we're jinxed with knees. Just watch Max.
Oh, well, then I'm going to weigh in. I know just what I'm going to say.
Right, hang on a sec. I'm going to put Mum on.
Sure.
All right? I won't put it on loudspeaker so that you've got the better signal, but here you go.
Okay.
Who am I going to be talking to? Hello?
Hello?
Leslie, say hello.
Hi.
Hi,
you're on
how
the
are you doing?
Fine, you're on the Artist Helping Artists radio show.
Oh, right. Hello. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello to you. We've just had a wonderful conversation with your daughter.
Oh, yeah.
It's been fabulous.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, she's very knowledgeable.
Yes, that she is. Good find by you. And go ahead, Margaret.
I think what I would want to say is just thank you so much for your wonderful brushes. And your wonderful daughter, who has answered all of our questions, and she just mentioned that you both have tricky knees, and I'm going to say goodbye by telling you, I just had my knee replaced, and it was the best thing I ever did. So there you go.
Oh, wow. Thank you for telling me that. That's good news, because it's quite worrying, isn't it?
It is. And once you have it done, you wonder how you could possibly have waited so long. So there you have
bless
it.
Bless you.
For
thank
it.
You for telling me
go
that.
Go for it.
Thank you. So
and
there is light at the end of this tunnel, and after all.
There is. And once it's over, you feel like $1 million or pounds, I suppose. But again, so much congratulations.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much.
On your move.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're
taking
care.
With regards to the brushes, it's our pleasure. We do it because we love doing it, not because we have to. We absolutely love doing it. And it gets us to meet so many wonderful people all over the world. We feel blessed big time.
Awesome.
I'm so happy.
Take care.
Okie dokie.
Bye.
I'll hand you back to Simi then, ladies. You have a good day
all
wherever
right.
you are in the world. God bless. Here's Simi. Bye-bye. Hello.
Okay, Simi, we're going to sign off, but thank you again so much. What a great show.
I will just say, ladies, secretly, I think she only came in to see Max. Because he looks so cute on the floor.
That's so sweet.
I can't thank you enough for wanting to talk to me again and, you know, the great questions. I hope, like I said at the beginning, I hope none of your listeners have fallen to sleep. And for anyone out there who does use our brushes, from the bottom of our hearts, and our is now collectively Mum, I and Max's, you know, thank you for you know, endorsing our brushes and loving and using them and keeping buying them. It's, you know, that's why we are able to do everything I've told you in the last hour or so that we've been able to do. You know, we really are grateful.
That's wonderful.
Well, thank you. You're with us every day. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Bye now. Okay. Take care.
Bye all.
See you. Bye.